Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hi there, and thanks a lot for joining me again today. Really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about again today, including the latest on that new Omicron variant. Should we be worried? Also, we'll find out about a new study on the symptoms of long COVID. We'll talk about pregnant women and the COVID vaccine. And we'll hear about a couple new vaccines in the trial stages at St. Louis University. But first, let's start the show the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchhold. Dr. Buchhold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchhold, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, Fred.
So let's start with the usual update. How are we doing in this area when it comes to new COVID cases and hospitalizations?
Yeah, well, I think the numbers are still high, but I think that the trend over the last 4 or 5 days at least is it seems like we've reached the peak. So the number of new cases is declining, but still it's still a large number. And again, I think higher than some of the previous waves we've had. We've seen that in the hospital too, just in the sense that there's a lot of people that are positive, but not all of them, to be fair, necessarily in the hospital because they're sick with COVID. Although a significant number are. So certainly, I think there's a reason to feel a little optimistic that we might have reached our peak, but time will tell with that. Certainly.
What are you hearing about the new Omicron variant BA2?
Yes, this is, from what I understand, it's been known and it was detected, even late 2021. And it's a variant that has some extra mutations on the spike protein. Remember, that's where one thought about the virility and the severity of diseases due to those mutations. And then, the main vaccinations, Pfizer and Moderna are kind of targeted towards some of the RNA along that. So in some countries, it's pretty prominent. So I think India said, the cases, they see a lot of this variant of Omicron in their Omicron cases. But in the United States, it doesn't seem to be that much. So I think it's another one of those things that time will tell, whether it will become more prevalent in the United States or not, or is it just, kind of local selection pressures or whatnot. I don't know. It seems, and I think the most reassuring thing is that, the vaccine certainly can still confer some degree of protection or symptom mitigation from this. I think the main question is this going to be another spike we're going to have to deal with in the United States, or is this just kind of a thing of interest? And I think we've all learned, Fred, time will tell with this, but so far it seems like it's not like something so new that can hit us like a ton of bricks like Omicron did.
Is the general thinking that when it comes to variants that to take over and be more widely spread, they have to be much more contagious, but sometimes they need to be a little less severe?
Yeah, and that tends to be the natural evolution of pandemics, Fred. So if you go back, the biggest pandemic that we can at least draw some conclusions from where there is modern medicine to kind of deal with this is the 1918 influenza pandemic. And it kind of evolved to where it was still coming, but the incidence rates were higher, but the people that got sick and I should say that died or really suffered from the disease was less, but it spread more quickly. And that's kind of where the thinking is. I think the hard part about that, making it, kind of judgments from that information is, then they didn't have a vaccine. In the midst of this pandemic, Fred, we deployed a number of vaccines that were kind of mass deployed differently across the country. So, you know, in the United States, or across the world, I should say. So in the United States, you know, the majority of people got the Moderna or Pfizer vaccine. In Great Britain, I don't know what the numbers are, but, you know, the AstraZeneca vaccine was there, and that had a different kind of mechanism of providing immunity. So, you know, evolution is a fact, and the virus is going to evolve based on selection pressures of what these vaccines, these antibodies that the vaccines induce do. And so it's going to create, you know, I think the kind of classic rules or laws we've learned from previous pandemics are a little bit difficult to interpret, because you have vaccines putting pressures on how the virus mutates. And you're seeing this. The Omicron has mutations of lung spike protein, which has been the target of vaccines, and it's natural that those are what's thriving. You know, we're, as physicians, we're used to dealing with this with antibiotics, because we give people antibiotics, and then the adaptation and the selection is for bacteria that are resistant to those types of antibiotics, and it's a constant arms race, Fred. It just is always a constant arms race, but it does seem, particularly those that have gotten vaccinated, that the advantage is it gets people sick, but it doesn't get them deadly sick, which is really what we're looking for. And as I said many times, the coronavirus is a variant of the common cold. And hopefully, at some point, this becomes just a common cold again. And, you know, I don't think Omicron has proven that yet, but certainly the death rate is less, and that's great. And hopefully that trend continues. But again, as we said, Fred, we've all been fooled many times by this virus. And so, you know, I'm not saying any of this with a degree of confidence. Let me put it that way.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, this past week we heard about Pfizer and Moderna testing their Omicron-specific vaccine. Do you think that's where we're headed down the road, maybe to a universal boosters once a year?
Yeah, I think that's another thing where time will tell. And, you know, with the Omicron, you know, what's cool about the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, and we said this before, Fred, is with the technology they're using, they can adapt very, very quickly. So really where I think the strategy will be is if we had, you know, I think another pandemic, we kind of have the sense of how to kind of adapt to that very, very quickly, which will be great. With Omicron vaccines, they're going to have to do trials. And I suspect by the time they really get those trials going, you know, the way kind of the history of Omicron has been, it's been, it comes and it goes as quickly as it comes. And I think we're seeing that here in St. Louis, and we've seen in other places. So I'm not sure if they'll have that ready for prime time by the time, you know, when Omicron is still here. That being said, I think, you know, certainly getting a universal vaccine would be nice. On the contrary side, is getting universal vaccines is really hard. Just ask any flu vaccine researcher. So, you know, I think the work needs to be done. It'll be great to have as a tool, but time will tell, certainly.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks again for joining us today. Really do appreciate it.
It's always my pleasure, Fred. Thanks for what you do.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll find out about a new study on the symptoms of long COVID. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Some local physicians have made a potential key discovery about long COVID. Here to tell us more about that is Dr. Leonard Weinstock. Dr. Weinstock is a gastroenterologist at Missouri Baptist Medical Center. Dr. Weinstock, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So tell us about this discovery. What did you find out?
Well, we found out that patients who develop long COVID, which is a complex, multi-systemic disorder that lasts months after recovering from an acute bout of COVID-19, whether it be mild or severe, can be related to an immune disturbance. And
call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This immune disturbance is very reflective of what many people in our community suffer from, namely mast cell activation symptoms. Now, there is a condition called mast cell activation syndrome, which probably affects at least 5% of the population and causes multi-systemic conditions and problems lasting their whole lifetime. And what we theorize is that because of the nature of the symptoms in both acute COVID and long COVID, that there might be a relationship between mast cell activation and the COVID conditions. So we did this research project accordingly.
So what is mast cell activation?
Mast cell activation is a general term, basically the mast cell, which is one of our immune cells in our body, which basically coordinates inflammation and when to start it and when to stop, will release chemicals which cause a variety of things to occur. It could be inflammatory or pro-inflammatory or anti-inflammatory actions in the body. And they can turn off the inflammation when the injury or infection is done with. But when a continuing source of inflammation occurs or infection occurs that you can't get rid of, it keeps the mast cells activated, and that activates other mast cells, and then you can have numerous symptoms throughout the body, including fatigue, muscle aching, headache, abdominal pain, ringing of the ears, brain fog, etc.
So how could this finding help then treat patients with long COVID?
So the finding that we had was basically a population study where we compared long COVID patients to controls and to my mast cell activation syndrome patients who have a mutation at birth and are highly active with inflammation and allergic type symptoms. And we looked at these sets of questionnaires that we send out to patients with mast cell activation syndrome and looked to see whether the long COVID patients acquired symptoms that were similar to and severe as mast cell activation syndrome patients. And what we found indeed was that the long COVID patients before they were sick filled out the questionnaires prior to being infected, and they were like normal controls. But after the infection and developing long COVID symptoms, they looked just like the mast cell activation syndrome patients, the same set of symptoms and the same severity. So the key thing here is this gives us hope that treating long COVID with similar drugs that we treat mast cell activation syndrome will help the long COVID symptoms.
We're talking with Dr. Leonard Weinstock. Dr. Weinstock is a gastroenterologist at Missouri Baptist Medical Center. Dr. Weinstock, how common is long COVID?
So if you're in the hospital, the biggest study shows that 44 to 50% of people who survive the illness and get out of the hospital will develop long COVID. If it's a milder case and they're convalescing at home, it's approximately 10% of patients who have COVID will develop long COVID.
And what are the symptoms?
So the most common three is generalized weakness, brain fog, memory problems, and severe fatigue. And then after that, the other ones that were very common in our study were shortness of breath, migraine-like headaches, ringing of the ears, abdominal pain, chest pain, and nerve pain.
Are some people more likely to get it than others when they've had COVID?
Well, I think the patients who have more severe disease are more likely to get it. Perhaps the viral load is greater. Perhaps the virus lives in the body longer and the immune system is kicked up by this continuously. And then with that immune system being active, it triggers activation of the mast cells. And we've seen this in studies that have looked at cells and biochemistry markers.
Today, how are mast cell activation syndrome patients treated? What medicine do they get?
They get antihistamines like Claritin and Zyrtec, plus they get the H2 blocker like Pepcid or Famotidine. They also get vitamins C and D. They get flavonoids, which are products from fruits and vegetables and pills that are called flavonoids, and those actually suppress mast cell activation, and that would be quercetin or lutein. And some people will also treat with a medication called low-dose naltrexone, which can be very helpful as well. And that's a prescription. But a lot of the prescriptions and advice that we give patients with mast cell activation syndrome are over the counter.
So somewhere in there may be a recipe to help people with long COVID?
Yes. A number of my patients have noted improvement in their symptoms. Patients are hard to cure. And again, I think it's going to be in time when the virus ultimately gets out of the system that will have improvement. There have been studies showing some improvement in patients who get a vaccine afterwards, after the infection. We're finding much less long COVID in patients who have been vaccinated. So that's encouraging. So if you haven't had your vaccine and you want to avoid not only the first pandemic, but the second pandemic, which is long COVID, then that would be important. I call it the second pandemic because this is going to affect so many millions of people, and it's going to affect their ability to work and perform in society, perform at home, and we're looking at a lot of disability coming up.
Dr. Weinstock, what's the main message you want to leave out there with listeners?
Well, first of all, it's not just the idea, hey, I'll take my chances, I'll get COVID, and I'll be fine, I'll develop immunity. No, you may develop years worth of disability from long COVID, between 10% chance and a 45% chance that this will happen to you if you get infected. So avoid the infection, get your vaccine. I think it's really critical. If you do get long COVID, find doctors who are willing to believe in it, and I think more and more are, and look at the over-the-counter recipes that can be found online to get over-the-counter treatments that could help.
Dr. Weinstock, thanks so much for your time. Really do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Dr. Leonard Weinstock is a gastroenterologist at Missouri Baptist Medical Center. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll talk about pregnant women and the COVID vaccine. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
COVID during pregnancy can cause a number of complications, according to new research. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Ebony Carter. Dr. Carter is a Washington University high-risk OBGYN at Barnes Jewish Hospital. Dr. Carter, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what is the risk for pregnant women who may not be vaccinated against COVID?
So the issue is that during pregnancy, patients are at higher risk for getting certain infections like the flu or like coronavirus. And so Omicron is no exception to that rule. So since the pregnant immune system kind of tamps down so that you don't attack this little baby that's now growing inside of you that's foreign to you, your body really can't mount as an efficient of an immune response against Omicron or coronavirus in general. So what we're seeing is that there are high rates of Omicron in the community in general, but we're seeing higher rates in pregnancy. So based on my clinical experience since December 21st, when Omicron became the dominant variant in our area, it looks like pregnant patients are about 50% more likely to have Omicron in the patients that we're admitting to the hospital. So it's definitely concerning, and I can't say exactly why that is, but my best guess is vaccination rates. So, you know, only 30-something percent of pregnant patients are vaccinated at this point versus over 60% in the general population. And so pregnant patients just don't have as much protection both through vaccination and because of, you know, what happens when you're pregnant always.
Can you address some of the concerns pregnant women might have about getting the coronavirus vaccine while pregnant?
Sure. So early on, a year ago, when the vaccines were new, one of the common concerns I heard was there's no data, and they were right. So pregnant patients were systematically excluded from all of the randomized trials that were done on the vaccine. So a year ago, that was true. That is no longer true. I think you could argue we have more data on the COVID vaccine and pregnancy probably than any other vaccine at this point, because literally, you know, 200,000 patients or more have been actively studied, and there are registries, there are all kinds of things that are happening. And the signal for all of those studies is that the vaccine is infinitely safer than getting the actual virus. We know that the virus increases the rates of preterm birth. And if you get sick, intensive care unit admission and needing a tube to breathe for you. I mean, coronavirus in pregnancy, I have seen firsthand, can be terrible, and it can result in death. The vaccine, on the other hand, provides excellent protection. And you might feel, you know, flu symptoms, some fatigue, chills for a couple of days. But that, compared to the risk of like end organ failure and death, it pales in comparison. So I think that we can definitively say at this point that the benefits of the vaccine, there's really not even any debate at this point. It's much safer than getting the virus.
Can the immunity that's supplied by the vaccine trickle down to the unborn baby?
That's an excellent question, and the answer appears to be yes. So there was a paper that was published within the last month that was showing that regardless of when a patient got the vaccine in pregnancy, that there was benefit, and that the antibodies are the soldiers in our body that mount up if there's a foreign invader like coronavirus, and it increases the numbers and it goes to attack it. And so we have seen that in the umbilical cord blood, so the umbilical cord gets nourishment from mommy over to baby, that we see mom soldiers getting passed over to baby. And so, I mean, I think more long-term studies are going to need to be done, but based on everything we know about prior vaccines, that is a really good indication that the baby is getting protection from mom getting vaccinated. I should also say that in that same study I just quoted, they also looked at moms who had gotten the virus during pregnancy, and actually it appeared that getting vaccinated provided better protection for mom and baby than actually having had the coronavirus. That's another thing I hear. Oh, I had the virus. I don't need it. That's not true. The vaccine is actually going to give you much better protection than prior infection in most cases.
We're talking with Dr. Ebony Carter. Dr. Carter is a WashU high-risk OBGYN at Barnes Jewish Hospital. Dr. Carter, you mentioned that Omicron appears to be more contagious for pregnant women than Delta.
So this is in our own unpublished data, but in terms of what we're seeing now, that is the signal for sure. The other thing that I want to emphasize that a lot of patients have said to me in clinic is, you know, at this point, we're asking everybody, you know, great, you're vaccinated. Have you been boosted? And most people are turning me down and saying, no, I think I'll just wait until after I have the baby to get a booster. And I think it's also becoming increasingly clear that getting boosted is actually really important. So vaccines are not perfect, right? There are breakthrough infections, but the breakthrough infections are tending to look like the flu, right? Fever, chills, not feeling so great, but nothing terrible. Being boosted is still providing significant protection against hospitalization or severe disease. And so what we need the vaccine to do is not just prevent the infection, that would be nice, but you want it to keep you from getting really sick and having the severe complications from it, especially when you're pregnant. And it appears that being boosted does that really well, like upwards of 90%. Versus people who have just completed the two-shot series, it's more like, on the order of like maybe 50 to 60%.
What about breastfeeding moms? Is it safe for them to get the vaccine and still breastfeed?
Yes, we would certainly encourage breastfeeding moms to get vaccinated. And it's the same potential principle. So we've seen that in breast milk, those same antibodies, we talked about the soldiers that mount up and fight infection, that those are actually being passed over in breast milk. We published a study about that at Barnes earlier in 2021. So I think breastfeeding moms should absolutely get vaccinated, and you're really getting twice the bang for your buck because the baby is not going to be able to get vaccinated, right? Like kids under five still don't have access to the vaccine. So breastfeeding might be the one thing that you can do to provide protection to your baby who's now coming into a world that is full of COVID.
So, Dr. Carter, your basic message to pregnant women is what?
My basic message is I know that pregnancy is a time when you want to do everything that you can to protect this little person who's growing inside of you. And the best thing in this Omicron world is to get vaccinated. And if you're already vaccinated, to get boosted. That is going to provide the best protection both for the mom and for the baby, both in utero and in the outside world.
Dr. Carter, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Ebony Carter is a Washington University high-risk OBGYN at Barnes Jewish Hospital. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll hear about a couple new vaccines in the trial stages at St. Louis University. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
An ongoing COVID-19 booster vaccine clinical trial at St. Louis University is seeking vaccinated volunteers. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Daniel Hoft. Dr. Hoft is a professor of medicine, molecular microbiology and immunology, and director of the St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development. He's also the protocol chair for this trial. Dr. Hoft, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Fred, for having me.
So update us on this trial.
So the study's been going on for a while, but the trial is looking at some new exciting vaccines that are for COVID that are able, we now know, to induce at least some level of neutralizing antibody responses similar to the licensed and other vaccines under EUA. But in addition, the vaccines are made in a way to include additional parts of the virus to be able to induce a different immune response, the T cell response. And these are unique vaccines in that sense that the other approved and licensed and used vaccines currently are really much more focused on just inducing an antibody response. Particularly in elderly people, we think that these new vaccines may be important for adding that extra layer of protective T cell response, because that is an area that elderly people tend not to have as good a immune response induced by vaccines, or they don't develop the same level of immunity during a natural infection. So we're hopeful that we can induce a combination of immune responses that could be better able to protect against all the new variants of the virus that are emerging over time, as we've seen with things like Delta and the Omicron variants.
Who is the maker of this vaccine?
A company, a small biotech company called Gritstone Bio. They have a history of making cancer vaccines targeting T cells for protecting against a cancer. And they have received funding both from the Gates Foundation as well as the NIH to take their vaccine platforms and use them for COVID vaccine development. And they've already gone through the making of the vaccines, testing them in mice, the first animal model, and also testing in non-human primates, the closest to humans that we have as an animal model. and now we are testing them in human trials. So what we're looking for are people, particularly elder subjects, that have already gotten vaccinated. We're not going to withhold the vaccines that are licensed or under EUA, but we want to see how these vaccines perform on top of the standard series of vaccination.
We're talking with Dr. Daniel Hoft. Dr. Hoft is a SLU Care Professor of Medicine, Molecular Microbiology, and Immunology, and Director of the St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development. He's also the protocol chair of this new Gritstone trial. Dr. Hoft, how important is it to look so far down the road when it comes to coming up with new boosters and new vaccines?
We don't know. We do know. I mean, we don't know with COVID-19, of course, because we're in the midst of the pandemic and it has thrown a number of curveballs at us already. But we do know that there have already been three separate coronavirus outbreaks of serious disease over the last 20 years, including SARS, the first SARS, MERS, and SARS-CoV-2. And we anticipate, based upon the fact that this has already happened multiple times, that it's going to happen in the future. So another thing that we're trying to develop, and the Gritstone vaccines may be able to protect against this problem in a different way, but that we need vaccines that can protect against future outbreaks of pathogenic coronaviruses. And the T cell responses that we're looking for tend to be much better conserved across coronaviruses than the sequences that are needed for the neutralizing antibody responses.
Explain to us again T-cell responses. What does that mean?
So a T-cell response is an immune response that can develop a memory after, say, a vaccination, just like the B-cell response, which is responsible for making antibodies, like the neutralizing antibodies. T-cells, unlike B-cells, do not make antibody. Instead, what they do is they recognize an infected cell, say a cell infected with SARS-CoV-2, and then can coordinate destruction of that infected cell before it makes new viral particles. So very different from the neutralizing antibodies made by B cells that are able to block a virus from infecting a cell. The T cell comes along and monitors for cells that are already infected and then can destroy them before the virus spreads.
So, Dr. Hoff, sum this up here. What do people need to know about this trial that's underway at SLU?
This trial, we think, and could be a game changer. It could provide a whole new layer of protection against COVID-19 as it changes its sequence into these different variants that are creating havoc with the world's health conditions as well as economies.
Good deal. If people want to know more information, what do they need to do?
They can contact us at St. Louis University, the Center for Vaccine Development. The easiest way probably is going to our website and looking for slu.vaccines.edu.
Dr. Hoft, thanks so much for your time again. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Fred.
Dr. Daniel Hoft is a professor of medicine, molecular microbiology, and immunology, and director of the St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development. He's also protocol chair of this Gritstone trial. St. Louis University researchers, meanwhile, have begun enrolling participants in a chikungunya vaccine clinical trial. Here to tell us more about that is Dr. Sarah George. Dr. George is an associate professor of infectious diseases at SLU and principal investigator for this trial. Dr. George, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
So tell us about this trial.
This trial is we are testing a vaccine that has been developed against a virus called chikungunya. Chikungunya is a virus in the tropics that is spread by mosquitoes. Fortunately, we do not have it here in St. Louis. But we do need a vaccine for it, for travelers and for military personnel, because it has become very widespread in the tropics, and it is a very nasty, debilitating disease.
What are the symptoms like of this disease?
Well, you get fevers, you ache all over, your joints swell up so badly it can be very hard for you to move. You can get a rash. You can also get headache and some other symptoms. So this is one you really do not want to get.
What's the current treatment?
There is none.
So what then are you looking at in this proposed vaccine?
This vaccine is a vaccine which is made of part of the chikungunya virus. So it's not the whole virus. You can't get the infection from this vaccine. And what we are looking for are healthy volunteers, ages 12 to 64. They would get a couple doses of the vaccine, and then we would follow their antibody levels for 6 months and see what kind of antibodies they make.
And what happens, since you said there is no current treatment, what happens when you get it? What's the end result?
Well, the end result, you hope, is that you get better. This is currently infecting over 100,000 people annually in the tropics right now. But getting better can take weeks. And in the meantime, you've got fever, headaches, swollen joints, nausea, muscle aches. It's very debilitating. In some people, they actually develop full-blown arthritis with some damage to the bones of their joints. So again, you really don't want this, and we really do need a vaccine for it.
Is it contagious?
It is spread from person to person by mosquitoes. So fortunately, it's not like COVID. You can't spread it through the air or anything like that. But if you're in the tropics where the right kinds of mosquitoes are biting, you can get infected with it from a mosquito bite.
Are you hopeful with this new vaccine?
Yes, I am. It looks like, based on testing so far, that it is raising the right kind of antibodies, and it looks like it's protective in the animal models that we always test anything in before we go into humans. So, yes, I'm very hopeful about this vaccine.
How long until you get some results?
It will be probably about a year or so once this trial fully enrolls. We are one of the sites carrying it out. There are other sites across the United States also doing this study.
And again, tell me why it's so important to find a vaccine for chikungunya.
Well, again, this vaccine trial, and it's just one dose of the vaccine, is a real problem worldwide in the tropics, and that means it's a problem for people traveling to the tropics. It's a problem for our military personnel going to the tropics. And again, there are cases imported into the United States from people who've traveled there. This is a really nasty disease, so we really do need a vaccine for it.
If people want more information, what do they need to do?
Well, we're looking for up to 75 healthy adults and adolescents between the ages of 12 and 64. Please call the Vaccine Center at 314-977-6333.
Dr. George, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Dr. Sarah George is an associate professor of infectious diseases at St. Louis University School of Medicine and principal investigator for this chikungunya clinical trial. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. Or you can download the Odyssey app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join me again next week at the same time for another edition of Health Matters on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.